Chapter 15. Amaris Revenged. 6 days passed without their watch being rewarded, and then Kebron, whose post was just opposite the road where they had traced the wheels, saw a chariot turn from the main road into it. As it came near, he became convinced this was the vehicle he was looking for. The horses tallied in color with those of Plexo, and the color of his clothing could be distinguished even at that distance. This time he was accompanied by Tylus.
"My father's murderer," thought Kebron. "If only I were down by the edge of the road with my bow and arrows."
The chariot turned off, and Kebron could no longer see it. He leaped to his feet and hurried along the hills to join Amuba and Jethro.
"Did you see them?" he exclaimed.
"Yes," Jethro replied. "Our search is over at last."
"Should we wait until they have left again and then go down?"
"No," said Jethro. "There are two things to be done here. One is to rescue Mysa, the other to punish the murderer of Amaris. We will therefore push on at once. Amuba and I carry stout peasant staffs, while you, Kebron, have your dagger. It is possible the four men who carried Mysa off may all be on guard there. But were there 20, I would not hesitate."
They made their way to the house. It was small but handsomely built, and was surrounded with a colonnade supported by carved pillars. The garden immediately around the house was carefully tended, and from its secluded position the house was well fitted as a place of sojourn for a wealthy priest or noble, desirous of a few days' rest from the city. They passed across the garden to the colonnade without the slightest sound. As they reached it, the sound of voices came through the wide doorway of an apartment opening out to the colonnade. Kebron and Amuba at once recognized the voice of Tylus.
"I will put up with no more of this folly, Mysa. You should think yourself fortunate, belonging to a disgraced family, to receive such an offer as my son makes to you. I will have an answer at once. Either you swear before the gods that you accept Plexo as your future husband, or you will this very night be confined in a tomb, where you will remain alone and without the light of day until you agree to my conditions. Don't think, you little fool, that I, Tylus, high priest of Osiris, am to be thwarted in my plans by the opposition of a child like you."
Here a voice, which the three listeners recognized to their surprise as that of Ruth, broke in.
"Do not listen to him, Mysa. Whatever comes of it, never consent to lie before God as this wicked man would have you do."
A furious exclamation broke from Tylus, and he stepped forward and seized the Hebrew girl roughly by the shoulder, only to start back with an exclamation as Ruth struck him with her open hand on the cheek.
"Drag her hence, Plexo," he said.
But at that moment the entrance was darkened, and the three listeners sprang into the room. Tylus, although for a moment startled at the sudden entry, did not recoil, but drawing his sword from his girdle, he said haughtily,
"Who are you? What means this intrusion?"
"We are those whom you have been hunting to death, Tylus, and we come here as avengers of blood. As you brought about the murder of Amaris and carried off his daughter, you must die."
Without a word, Tylus rushed upon Jethro with his sword, thinking to make short work of this insolent peasant. But as he did so, the trained warrior whirled his massive club round his head and caught the blow upon it. Tylus stopped his arm and, gazing steadily at his opponent, said,
"Do you dare to murder the high priest of Osiris?"
"No, but I dare to execute him."
And Jethro brought his heavy club down with all his strength upon the head of the priest. At this moment, Plexo, who had stolen from the room unobserved, returned, followed by three armed men. Kebron and Amuba were so intent on the combat between Jethro and the priest, they did not notice the entrance of Plexo, who, with uplifted knife, sprang upon Kebron. There was a scream of warning, and quick as thought, Ruth leaped forward and pushed Plexo as he sprang through the air. The sudden shock threw both of them to the ground. Ruth leaped to her feet again, but Plexo lay there motionless. The three armed men stood for a moment stupefied at the fall of their two employers, and then, seeing two men and a woman, rushed forward to attack them. One sweeping blow with Jethro's staff felled the first of his assailants to the ground. The others paused irresolute.
"Drop your weapons, or you are dead men," Jethro exclaimed.
As Kebron had now thrown back his female robe and drawn his dagger, while Jethro and Amuba were advancing against them, the two remaining men dropped their weapons.
"Hold out your hands," Jethro said.
"My son, stand over them with your club and break the skull of either who may move." The men did as they were ordered. Jethro tore strips of cloth off their garments, twisted these into ropes, and bound their wrists firmly together. As soon as the two men were tied, Jethro secured in the same manner the man who was lying stunned from his blow. Then he turned to Plexo, who had not moved since he had fallen. Jethro half turned him round and uttered a low exclamation of surprise. Then he said to Kebron,
"Go with the young ladies into the garden and remain there until we join you."
Kebron passed out onto the colonnade with Mysa and Ruth. The moment they were unobserved, Mysa threw her arms around him. The two embraced one another, and then he turned and said,
"Ruth, you saved my life. I shall never forget it." "I only pushed him and he fell. I scarcely know how it was done."
"I had not noticed him till you cried out, and then it would have been too late. We have been anxious for you also, Ruth. We hoped that you might be with Mysa, but no one saw you go out with her."
"My place was with my mistress," Ruth said quietly, "and she is more than my mistress. She is a friend to me." "But how came you here, Kebron?" Mysa asked. "And why were you dressed like a peasant woman? And Amuba and Jethro, too, they were dressed as peasants, and their faces seemed changed, I do not know how. I should not have known them had I not recognized Jethro's voice."
"It is a long story, dear sister. I will tell you presently, and we want to hear your story also. But here come the others."
"Plexo is dead," said Jethro. "As he fell, his arm was beneath him, and the knife he intended for you, Kebron, pierced his own heart. And now let us have a consultation. There is much to decide upon and arrange. We'll go around to the garden at the other side of the house. There we can sit and talk, and at the same time keep watch that no one else arrives."
"Now, first of all," said Mysa, once they were seated, "I must have my questions answered. How are my father and mother and everyone?"
Jethro took Amuba's arm and turned away.
"We will leave you, Kebron, to tell Mysa and Ruth what has taken place. It will be better for you to do so alone."
Kebron gently told his sister and her friend of the death of the cat, the violence which had claimed the life of Ameres, and the pursuit that he, Amuba, and Jethro had thus far managed to evade. Mysa wept bitterly, but at last, catching her breath, she said,
"I see that the death of Porsis was not your fault, Kebron, but how could our father say that the gods would not be angry?"
"I cannot tell you all he said, Mysa, but he did say so, and you know how wise and good he was. Therefore I want you to remember what he said, so that when I am gone you will not all your life think of me as one accursed."
"Oh, I should never do that. But why are you talking about going, and where are you going?"
"I am going, Mysa, because the people of Egypt are hunting all the land to find and slay me and Amuba. For not knowing the exact truth, they put us down as equally guilty. So we must fly. Our father gave full directions to Jethro, and we should by this time have been a long distance away, had it not been that we stayed to find and rescue you."
"Then if the other things these villains told me are true, Kebron, it may be true also that the letter they showed me ordering me to consent to marry Plexa was from our mother. How could she tell me that? She knew I hated Plexo, and she over and over again spoke scornfully of his family."
"Well, what did she say?"
"She said the disgrace had fallen upon our family, and I might think myself very fortunate in obtaining such an offer."
Kebron was silent, He knew that their mother had never shown any earnest love either for Mysa or himself, that her thoughts were entirely devoted to dress and entertainments, and that any love she had given had been bestowed upon their brother, Necho. His thoughts were interrupted by Mysa asking, "What is to become of me now?" "You must go back to our mother, Mysa. There is nothing else for you to do."
"I will not. She never loved me. She would have married me against my will to Plexo, although she knew he was bad and that I hated him. She would only make me marry someone else who was rich, regardless of my wishes. No, Kebron, nothing shall make me go back to her."
Kebron was perplexed.
"Well, here come Jethro and Amuba, dear. You had best talk it over with them."
As Jethro came up, Mysa walked to meet him.
"I will not go back to my mother, Jethro," she exclaimed impetuously. "She wanted me to marry Plexo. She would only give me to someone else. And my father always said I should only marry someone I liked. You can never be so cruel as to give me up to her."
"I know that your father's wishes were strong upon that point," replied Jethro. "He said he wished I could watch over you as over Kebron, and it was because of what he said that I lingered here in hopes of freeing you. Still, I don't see anything else to be done."
"Well, I will not go to her. She thought of herself as she always did, not of me in any way. I shall go with you and Kebron and Amuba."
"Impossible. We are going upon a tremendous journey, full of danger and fatigue. We'll be going among unknown and savage peoples. The chances are 100 to 1 against our ever arriving at the end of our journey. If this is so for us, Mysa, what chance would there be of your making such a journey?"
"I can walk as well as Kebron, and I suppose I could suffer hardship just as well. At any rate, I would rather suffer anything and be with him and all of you than stay here. The people have murdered our father. My mother would sell me to the highest bidder. I have only Kebron in all the world. I want to go where he goes."
And when he hesitated still, she said,
"You say my father wished you to watch over me, Jethro. Please do not forsake me now. Ruth will come with us too. Will you not, Ruth?"
"I will assuredly go if you go, Mysa."
Jethro was silent. Such an addition to his charge would assuredly add immensely to the difficulties of the journey. But on the other hand, he remembered the anxiety of Ameres about Mysa, and he asked himself what his late master would have wished had he known how matters stood. Then he glanced at Amuba and Kebron, and he saw at once that their wishes agreed with those of Mysa. "Mysa," he said gravely, "this is a great thing that you ask. There is no disguising that your presence will add greatly to our difficulties. Such an enterprise must be undertaken in no light spirit. You must be prepared to face death in many forms. Hunger, thirst, the weapons of hostile natives. It is a terrible journey. Still, if you are resolved, resolved with the strength and mind of a woman, not of a child, that you will never repent the step you have taken or wish to return to Egypt, then I say you shall share our lot."
Mysa uttered an exclamation of joy.
"I promise, Jethro, and whatever may happen, you shall never hear a word of complaint from me. Are you not glad, Ruth?"
"I think it well," Ruth said.
"I too would leave this land of idols, and except for those here, I have none in the world to care for."
"And now, Jethro," Amuba said, "what had we best do?" "Well, before we start, I will make a search through this house. There will be nothing we'll want to take with us, but if I toss some of the things about, it will look as if robbery had been the motive of what has taken place here." In 10 minutes, Jethro and Amuba had turned the place into confusion, forcing open chests and cabinets and littering the floor with garments. Then, taking a few of the most valuable pieces, they threw these into the pond round the fountain, where they would be concealed from view by the water lilies which floated on its surface. They then examined afresh the fastenings of the captives and felt assured that by no possibility could they free themselves.
By tomorrow night they will be sure to be freed. Otherwise I would not like to leave them here to die of hunger and thirst. And they will not associate us with these events when the authorities arrive."
They all left and returned to the residence of Kigron the embalmer. There Jethro apprised him of what had occurred. Kigron called his servants and told them that he had just heard of the arrival from the country of some friends, and he ordered a room to be prepared for them. He then went out and returned a little while later with the two girls. He led them into the house and directly to the apartment prepared for them. Then he called an old servant on whose fidelity he could rely, and charged her to wait upon them during the day, and to suffer no one else to enter the apartment. He bade her convey the impression to the other servants that the visitors were aged women, and to mention that they intended to make a brief stay only. The old woman at once prepared baths for the girls, and then supplied them with a meal, after which they lay down on couches and were soon fast asleep. Meanwhile, Amuba, Jethro, and Kebron returned to the hillside hiding place. The next day, Kigron went out again and was soon joined by Jethro, who had now resumed his attire as a citizen of middle class. It was necessary for Kigron to accompany him and take the chief part in making the arrangements for the journey, for although Jethro had learned in his 2 years' captivity to speak Egyptian fluently, he could not well pass as a native. First they took their course down to the river bank. Here innumerable craft lay moored. As soon as it was known that they were looking for a boat, they were surrounded by the owners of the various craft, each praising the speed, safety, and comfort of his boat. Kigron, however, took some time before he made his choice. Then he fixed upon a boat that seemed well suited for the purpose. She carried a mast and large sail to take advantage of favorable winds. She was light and of very small draft, and she had a large cabin divided into two parts for the accommodation of ladies.
"I think your boat will do very well," he said to the captain, "provided we can come to terms."
It was a long time before a bargain was struck, for Kigron knew that the boatman would consider it strange indeed were the terms he first asked to be accepted. But at last an arrangement satisfactory to both parties was concluded. It was arranged that the start should take place early the following morning, and Kigron then proceeded with Jethro to make the purchases requisite for the voyage. In addition to necessities, there would be several bales of costly merchandise and a large stock of such articles as would be useful for trade with natives of the wilder parts of the country. A supply of arms, bows, arrows, lances, and swords, were also placed on board. It was late in the afternoon before all these things were put onto the boat and everything arranged in order. Having seen all complete, Kigron returned with Jethro to his house. After seeing the girls, Jethro went up to the hiding place on the hill and found Kebron and Amuba.
"Everything is in readiness," he told them. "The boat is hired and furnished. I have a good store of merchandise for trading in Mero, besides trinkets of many kinds for the peoples lying between Mero and the Red Sea. The boatmen on our vessel belong to the Upper Nile, and their dialect differs too widely from that spoken here for them to be able to distinguish that I do not talk pure Egyptian. Therefore we need fear no suspicion on the part of our boatmen. Kigron has given out to his servants that the visitors are relatives of mine, and as I have been frequently seen going in and out in this garb, they are now accustomed to me. It will be natural for me to sleep there tonight, and to start with the two girls in the morning. We shall start exactly at sunrise. You two had better wait at a distance from the house and follow us, coming up and joining us just as we reach the riverside. The boat will be taken above the city to the highest steps, and we shall be able to proceed to that point without entering the town itself. The news of the death of Tylus will not, I hope, be generally known in the city until we are fairly afloat. Were it otherwise, it would be dangerous for you to run the risk of being seen abroad."